Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we welcome you back to this conversation, not the conversation we just had. We're actually leaving the Ukraine and coming back to our own home of Baltimore here, where we're broadcasting from here on the Mark Steiner Show at WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And part of that voice is talking about our city from the perspective of people that don't always get the airwaves they need to get. And there are three events coming up in organizations that are working with our young people doing really interesting work, and they're here in the studio with us now. Neasha Dixon is back with us.
Good morning.
Always good to see you. Service coordinator at, yes, the Youth Empowerment Services Drop-In Center in Baltimore. That's over on Charles Street. Good to have you back in the studio. Our dear friend, Davon Love, who's Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. And every time I look at him, I keep thinking I met him when he was 14. He's not 14 anymore.
Thank you.
That's what happened. And Sarah Tooley, Director of 901 Arts, and Deborah Evans, founder of 901 Arts. Good to have you both here as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
And number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, or you can log on to our Facebook pages. But give us a call, 410-319-8888. Let's run down very quickly what you all are doing in these events coming up. What's going on with the Leaders of Beautiful Struggle, Davon?
So we're initiating what we're calling a community supporter drive. So the whole idea is that, we want to be able to offer free programming to young people. And just a few of those programs that we are working on, one is the Eddie Conway Liberation Institute, which is we had our second installment of that this past summer.
And let me just interrupt you. Hugely successful.
Yes, thank you.
Hugely successful.
Absolutely.
Kids from all over the United States came in to be part of this debate program here at Morgan State University.
Yep, so students from Baltimore, but also students from Oakland, from Detroit, from Houston. So it was a great success. So it's that program. We're also initiating this fall the Walter Carter Leadership Institute, which is kind of our local advocacy program where we're training young people in advocacy using policy debate. And we're also in the process of establishing a policy debate team here at Morgan State University, which would be the only historically black college university that has a policy debate team.
That's pretty not debate team, but a policy debate.
Policy debate, which is very distinct.
Right.
Because
there are
different forms of forensic activities, but policy debate is the most academically rigorous form of forensics. And so so those are the programs. So the idea is people contribute, they subscribe on a monthly basis, and that money helps to support our ability to offer those three programs for free, along with the advocacy work that we do with the young people.
And I really encourage people to be a subscriber to that, and I'm going to become a subscriber to that, to support the work of what LBS is doing in the community.
Appreciate that.
I mean that. I mean, you all are doing amazing work. As Neasha Dixon, it's good to be back in the studio. And
you
all are doing it. When I came to your event of last month, whatever that was that you had.
Open house,
when people were speaking. I was thinking about the story the city paper had yesterday. And one of the young people that was living under the bridge, under the Route 83, was a young man who was gay who was kicked out of his house. And I thought about being in your place now, how many young people who are gay and lesbian, transgender, who are actually on the streets because they've been thrown out of homes and can't live. And that's part of the group of people that you're talking to and working with.
It's part of the population.
Part of the population. I said right, part.
Yeah,
right.
It's definitely a part of it because people get kicked out, people run away. People are ostracized for all numbers of reasons, and so they become homeless and they come to us. But that is what we're doing tomorrow, because Folk and Funk. Bring me home. The whole purpose is to bring some brothers and sisters home, because they are out there without a home. And it's just, housing is a human right, you know? We have the right to be stable, to be safe, to happiness and to peace in our lives. And you can't have that without the foundational building blocks of stability. And so that's what we're doing tomorrow at the UB Blake Jazz Center at 8 p.m. Folk and Funk, Bring Me Home. We're going to be jamming out with Caleb Stein and Jay Pope and Funk Friday, and a lot of our youth are actually going to be debuting themselves.
A real mixture of music.
Yes, yes. Blended folks, because, you know, different strokes of different folks.
And let's turn over to 901 Arts, which also does amazing work. And who wants to wax forth? You want to start, Deborah?
Yes. So what we're working on today is we're having a great fish fry block party. Right out in the street. It's probably the only place you can come and have dinner and have tables right on the street, and it's to benefit 901 Arts. We have the Barrage Band that's going to be there with us as long as our drum line. So that's what we're working on. It's from 5:30 to 8, but it's a fun time right in the streets of Baltimore.
And that's going to be in Waverly.
It's going to be in Waverly. 901 Montpelier Street is where it's going to be. But we block the street off, put tents up, and have a great time.
That's tomorrow.
It's today.
Oh, it's today. Oh, excuse
it's
me.
Today.
I'm glad you're here then. It's today.
It's today.
5:30 to 8 p.m.
5:30 today. To 8 p.m. Stop by.
You know, and it's interesting that looking at the history of Baltimore, that, you know, we look at the second line that is very famous in New Orleans, obviously. But the second line was in Baltimore. And what you're describing in Baltimore is a descendant of Baltimore's second line that happened here. This is a big part of the community here in the 19th century, early part of the 20th century, that we don't talk about that piece of history in Baltimore. There's a lot of pieces of history that we lose that I think we have to kind of reclaim. And to me, some of the stuff you're doing is reclaiming some of that. I love hearing when you all come down the street, wherever you are, and the drums are going.
Yes, if we're invited somewhere on our way walking back to the cars, we just play for the people.
It's a good thing. So talk about, I'm curious, who are the populations that you all are talking to? Who's inside your places?
I mean, for us, it's primarily high school students is the primary group that we work with, and college students as well. You know, as we know, you know, young people grow up fast. And so one of the things that, you know, we try to institutionalize is a formal pipeline where, you know, students, you know, as they develop, become mentor to other students and create that kind of cyclical mentoring structure.
Right. And your kids are mostly homeless that you reach out to.
Yeah. The Youth Empowered Society serves homeless youth 14 to 25, but we primarily are seeing right now young people 18 to 25 coming out of high school. Thankfully, this year we will have the tuition waiver, and so we'll be able to assist young people in going to college. So that is a huge barrier that we've been able to kind of overcome, and we look forward to serving more people thanks to that.
I mean, you got to the center because you went there first, right?
Pardon?
I mean, how did you get involved in the center in the beginning?
Through AmeriCorps.
Through AmeriCorps. That's how you got there. And 901, who comes to 901?
901 Arts is attended by youth who live in the Waverly neighborhood, and we have toddlers up through seniors in high school, and they come 4 days a week in the school year and 5 days a week during the summer. And we do everything from art classes with them to individual music lessons on any instrument we can get our hands on, that we can get a volunteer to teach. So we've had guitar, bass, violin, cello, piano, voice, saxophone, trumpet, glockenspiel even.
Glockenspiel?
Yeah. We have a homework club, SAT prep for students that are looking for academic enrichment. We also had a beat-making club where kids were learning how to make their own rhythms to lay raps over, as well as a parent-toddler art hour that was started by a parent in the neighborhood who wanted to get to know more parents of young children. We had a theater program this summer, and then we also have our drumline and our teen summer job program. So it's all neighborhood youth. Largely, the population in our neighborhood is African-American, and we have between 70 and 80% of children in our neighborhood are receiving free or reduced price lunch. So part of our legacy is about addressing inequality and meeting a need where arts has been largely taken out of the public schools, and our youth have been divided up without community school and are going to five different public elementary middle schools. And then there's a proliferation of charter schools. So even in that regard, it's a way to bring community together.
One of the things that I'm thinking about as I hear the three of you speaking, I want to jump into this in kind of substantive way that goes into and beyond the work that everybody's doing here individually mm-hmm. in their organizations, which, you know, I mean, we look at Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle and working on building both institutional capacity and the capacity of the intellectual capacity of young people in our high schools and as leadership of the future and dealing with these questions of kids who are homeless. And homelessness can be, people can be homeless 1 week and have a home the next week, and it's a very transitory thing, and how the arts have been taken out of the world of our children across the city, not emphasized in our schools, not put into the lives of kids anymore. And, you know, I'm very curious about what you think is what we need to do I mean, if there was an organization like you all come from, organization come from, and there was some power in terms of making the change, what do we have to begin to do to address the issues that the young people face that you work with every day? You know, I mean, it's when we've gotten to a place now where nonprofits are taking the role that government institutions used to take in working with people. And now we have a situation where people that don't have jobs, that used to have jobs. What's our response? What do you think our response should be? So I'm going to jump into that and get our listeners to come back in at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and what we mean by youth empowered society, what we mean by building capacity. What do those things mean? And let's talk about that together when we come back from this break. We'll be right back. The 901 Arts Drumline you're hearing right now. We were talking about it earlier. We went to break hearing Jay Pope and Funk. That'll be at the Yes event on Friday. Friday? Friday.
Friday.
Friday. We'll get to all that again. So join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and ideas. And please tweet us at Mark Steiner. Write to me here at steinershow@gmail.com. I mean, no. talk@steinershow.org. We changed that. talk@steinershow.org. 410-319-8888. We're here with Neasha Dixon. From the Youth Empowerment Services, Sarah Tully and Deborah Evans, 901 Arts and Devon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, and you at 410-319-8888. We're going to come right to our first caller in just a second. Hold on, Lester. I know that's Dr. Lester Spence. Get him on the line with us. But before I do that, I mean, we were talking during the break about what has to happen in this city. All of you are running in organizations that are very close to the community, very close to the streets, very close to the students in our high schools, and are not getting a lot of funding from the outside world to do your work. I mean, you're struggling every minute to keep these things rolling and you're building, but in a very positive sense. So what has to happen in this town? What has to happen to change? Let me go to Neasha and then go over to Devon first, because you both said something during the break I think needs to be heard, and then we'll open the phones and go over to Deborah. Neasha?
So what I think needs to happen is that we all, we need to look at ourselves as individuals and see who we are as individuals, as a part of this movement, as a part of being powers to be reckoned with in this, as trying to be, you know, game changers. And when we look at ourselves in the capacity that we're working in these nonprofit organizations, we then have to look at ourselves as gatekeepers. These nonprofits, we are, we're access points for resource, education, knowledge, power. We are the provider. And with that kind of power, we have to be responsible for understanding our place in society and our place in this work and all. And what I was saying during the break was that, you know, in the 1700s, 1800s, there was a strategic planning going on in this country around what this country was all about and who was going to be the powers to be, who was going to be served, and who was going to be left on the sidelines. Of course, none of us, not you, Mark, not me, not Devon, none of us were a part of that. And nonprofits, institutions, organizations, big, you know, powers to be, often will look back and do strategic planning. But this country hasn't done one. This country needs to look at what we're doing, because we, on the ground, we are serving very specific problems. But these problems are being created by a much bigger issue. This country is experiencing a much bigger issue, and you're seeing it all the time. And a very great example of what I'm talking about, you see it every day with Tyrone West and Mike Brown and all the other names that you don't know, because within the past 10 years, there was over 100 people that were shot by Baltimore City Police alone, and over 60% of them were killed. So there's many of people that are not being talked about, but the issue that is, this country was built upon race relations and a specific race being more powerful than another and maintaining control through that. And we need to start reformatting that, because nobody in this room, very few people I know personally, had the same mindset of those in the 1700s and in the 1800s or even in the 20s, 30s, 40s. So we need to start progressively making moves.
Dave, I'm going to let you jump in before we go to the phones and come over here to our friends from 901.
I would say, I mean, there are two major things. I think the first is that, you know, mass media has an effect on our collective consciousness and what we deem important, what we think is significant.
Amen.
And part of the problem is that those of us that are doing the most effective work on the ground tend to not have access to the major media outlets for people to know that our work exists. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that you'll hear people say is, oh, you know, black people, we're not doing nothing. You know, like that's the general sense that folks have, because the information doesn't get to our people in a way where they can see the power of the work that's being done. So I think one thing that's very important is, you know, creating an atmosphere and environment. And social media can help to counteract some of that. But if you're talking about like old school organizing, you still have folks that aren't connected into the social networking context. And so I think it's vastly important that we do what we can to lift up individuals and organizations like this show, you know, like to intentionally do that work. So that's one. The second is that, and you know, we kind of alluded to it or talked about it during the break in terms of, you know, grants and, you know, who receives them and so on. And I think there needs to be a paradigm shift where we're talking about investing in communities to build their own capacity instead of giving money to causes. Because what happens is when you give money to causes, it only allows people to address the symptoms. But when you give invest resources and give people investments, you invest in the capacity to build the wherewithal to substantively build the community to address the individual problems.
And that's the capacity building piece is something we're going to explore, as we said, in greater depth in the coming weeks with Davon and many others in this program, what that means and how to shift that. And Sarah, I think you were going to come next, and we're going to go to Dr. Lester Spence on the phone.
Sure. I mean, everything everyone is saying is absolutely true. The legacy that we exist in right now is one based on chattel slavery within the U.S. and a continuation of white supremacy. And to address that adequately, I think we need to, as a nation, continue to look at what reparations could look like to kind of get rid of the wealth inequality. When we live in Maryland, it's the wealthiest state in our nation. And you can drive through, walk through, take the bus through Baltimore and see what poverty looks like. You can live it, experience it. And if we're not at a place to address ending poverty and anti-black racism, then we're not going to be in a place to move forward to get rid of some of the more symptomatic things of that, which could be like the police violence. And some of the ways that I think that are positive that are moving forward is seeing like the Black Male Empowerment Be Me project, where I think 10 black men were funded $10,000 to do the work that they already do in their communities, and to continue to look for ways that communities can be empowered.
So, folks, how do you think we should empower this city and empower this community from the bottom up? And that's what we're really talking about here, and we're talking about the organizations that are represented on this program right now. 410-319-8888 is the number. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Let me know what you think. Let all of us know what you think. 410-319-8888. A lot of people who listen to this program are involved in community projects, have been involved in the 300-man march, been involved with LBS, been involved with lots of things in this city. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones, and I believe this is Dr. Lester Spence online. Lester.
Hey, first of all, I want to reiterate what a number of the callers of what the guests have said, but also I want to give them all a shout out. They've been, I said this before, one of the things I think makes Baltimore unique in the country is that it has a critical core of organizations that are interested in building the capacity of Baltimore, of youth in general, black youth in particular, with an eye towards building political capacity. I think that's really, really, really important. I particularly want to give out a shout out to the folks that I directly have worked with in one way or another, 901 Arts and Leaders of Beautiful Struggle. But I actually want to turn it a different way. I think the biggest, one of the biggest hellraisers in Baltimore, somebody who's done the most work in kind of making Baltimore politics transparent, is Kim Trueheart. And one of the reasons she's been able to do so is in part because she's retired. And I would, and we've been talking about youth and we've been focusing on youth. I was wondering if what would it look like if, what would a similar emphasis on Baltimore seniors look like? And I was, even though this moves the conversation kind of in another direction, I was wondering what the panelists thought about that.
I think elders and youth coming together is
imperative.
Imperative. Mm-hmm. Imperative. Who wants to grab? Dave, on then Deborah, you want to jump that way? Go ahead.
I mean, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, at LBS, we've been really fortunate to connect with particularly black elders who have been tremendously helpful in giving us guidance and mentorship. I mean, there's certainly, I think, a place for advocacy where, you know, our elders are involved in that. There's certainly issues in terms of, you know, the politics of that and, you know, but I mean, I think that's certainly something that you know, we should put emphasis on. One of the things I was really grateful for, there was an event a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago, at UB, where the surviving members of the Goon Squad were there.
Yes.
We got to hear about
right.
some of the stories of the activism of the Goon Squad, you know, during the 60s and 70s. So, you know, that information and that guidance is, you know, indispensable.
And remember, we talked about this yesterday, and Deborah, Dave and I were talking yesterday when we met. You know, thinking about youth and leadership, it was there were elders in the black community in the South who helped motivate SNCC to begin and motivate the struggle to begin in the South, but young people actually ran it and took it over, and the elders stayed with them through that. And we also have to remember that people like King was only 30 years old in 1959. So when he was leading all the Montgomery bus boycott, when all that was going on, he was 24 years old. So, I mean, this is something we have to keep in our minds, Deborah.
You know, in our neighborhood, we have a large number of elders, and 901 Arts, it's a place that they feel comfortable, and we do everything that we can to invite them in. Miss Violet, who is probably 89, will be leading the fish fry dinner, serving up those plates today. You know, she's in there, and she called me yesterday and said, can we do another yard sale? You know, and that's the seniors leading, and we just follow. And I said, let's wait until spring. But it's very important. Baltimore or Maryland has a foster grandparent program, and they are in some of the schools. There, I have 9 of them where I work. But these are volunteers that are seniors that go into places to volunteer, and that's a good program. But it would be awesome if they also could do they could come into neighborhoods like our art center or other projects, and then the state gives them a stipend for that. But in our neighborhood, a better way, our adults are our elders, because I'm an adult, are active, and we just do everything we can to get them there.
Lester, what were you talking about? I mean, what was on your mind when you said that?
So recently it was revealed that Baltimore is taking steps towards privatizing their water, and a sister who was doing organizing around it reached out to me asking if I had students, you know, and we just started school this week. And I was thinking about Ms. Trueheart, and I was thinking about the work she did, and given that seniors, that if Baltimore were to privatize their water, seniors would be the hardest hit because they live on fixed incomes, you know, yada, et cetera, et cetera, that perhaps it would be a good idea for her to think through organizing seniors, right? Like, what would Baltimore look like if, in addition to youth trained by leaders of a beautiful struggle, we'd had seniors, like dozens of Truehearts, right? Where because they have They have a lot of free time because they're retired, where they're consistently going to meetings, consistently doing the work. And that's something I hadn't thought about until a conversation with that sister. You know, I've been focusing, like your guest, I've been focusing on youth, in part because I teach students and in part because, you know, my research interests. But I think that there's another population that is worth actively organizing, that is politically organizing, not just necessarily reaching out to community-wise.
And that's in some ways, when we've covered a lot of what Lester was talking about and had the program here about the water, but we also have been covering the housing struggle in Baltimore around privatization, and that is what that group looks like as well. I mean, it was the elders who were put in those homes who were kind of organized themselves to say, no, we don't want this to happen, and tying in with young people who were involved in the struggle as well. I mean, that's – so what – I mean, I'm curious about listeners thinking 410-319-8888 and what you all think. What has to happen? What does the next step look like to you all? Anybody can jump in. Davon, go ahead.
I don't want to hug them.
go ahead. Start it off. Kick it off.
Kind of in response to what Lester just said, you know, it's interesting because there are a lot of cities that are organized. It's a question of what they're organized to do and what and the kinds of capacity that they have in the organizations that they're in. Many of the scenes that I know are organized in the context of neighborhood associations. And one of the things that I find lacking is a disconnect between, you know, organizing, you know, based in neighborhood associations and connecting that to other things that are happening in our community. And I think a part of that is just youth are generally a very transient group. You know, we're not, many of us, we move a lot more often, you know, just have lives that are way more, mobile and fluid. And so, you know, but I think there's something very important about investing in the vitality of neighborhood associations. And I think that's something that would be important in terms of the question that Lester poses, in terms of, you know, organizing seniors, because I think that's where you'd start, because traditionally that's where, you know, seniors tend to be in political organizing, in that regard. But then also in terms of building more community power, because I think if these neighborhood associations had the social media skills or had more bodies to do lobbying in City Hall in Annapolis, or, you know, then I think that would be a demonstration of power that would take advantage of the fact that there's seniors that are already organized. It's just, again, a matter of what they're organized to do. And neighborhood associations are typically organized to handle very, you know, issues that are very pertinent to the community, you know, speed bumps and trash and things like that. But if we were able to connect with them, I think it would enhance politically the power of the communities and that connection between seniors and youth.
Because I think the part of the youth thing, Niash, then come back over here to Deborah and Sarah. I mean, I think that people do not take the voice of young people seriously in this process and who they are. I think about the people I heard speak on the mic at your event when I went to it the other month. And I think people don't take those voices seriously, and you can all use all kinds of excuses as to why not to take it seriously.
Honestly, I don't know why they don't take us seriously. That I don't get. I feel like we have presented ourselves time and time again as being assets for, you know, this change that we want to see in our world around us. And actually, at YES, there's a group of youth leaders called the YES Valedictorians, and this is one of the things that they have actually been looking at. They've been looking at themselves as young leaders and how they fit, and what kind of knowledge do they need to be better leaders, and then identifying that they don't want to keep repeating history. And if we're not knowledgeable about what happened in our past, then we are going to repeat it. So we've actually been going out in the Upton, Sandtown, Hollins, and Holland Park communities, meeting with different community associations to kind of build off of our knowledge and cultivate those relationships with the elderly members of those communities. However, thanks to Dr. Lester Spence, I'm very deep in thought right now, actually, in this very moment as to how we're going to do a better job of that, because there is an intergenerational gap of understanding, and we're in the steps right now of navigating those waters and figuring those things out.
And you know, at 901 Arts, we're grabbing them like we have a toddler group now that a parent is leading. So we're grabbing our children at that age and getting them into the art center until they become teenagers. We have seniors that have hung in there with us, and now they are leading. And then so when they leave us, you know, they can go and join another organization, or they can lead the organization. And theirs is through art and music. They took on the environment of the small piece of where does this trash go when we put it down in the gutters. And so they researched it, and they decide to do beautiful art of things that live in the Chesapeake Bay. And so all through our neighborhood, there are everything that lives in the Chesapeake Bay are painted. And then they took that to other places, and they are teaching other children in other neighborhoods. So we have to stay connected and do the little piece that we can do, and that's what we're doing. And then we're getting them ready, well, they're getting themselves ready to do something greater than that, you know, when they get older. So that's where we are at 901 Arts with, and it's a wonderful program. I love it.
No, I think all three of these programs to me are very different and I think very critically important to the community. I mean, the work all three of you are doing and the groups you work in are very different. I think that, and that what we don't, I mean, there's a lot swirling on in this city it's not connected. And I have a feeling, though, we can feel it connecting informally and maybe formally, and people coming together to really figure out how to make this change, the political power that Lester was talking about and all the rest. You can feel it bubbling up, and I think that's why I was, when I knew that all of you had these events coming up, we talked about having this program today, was getting the three groups on together just to have this dialogue and conversation for a minute, you know, as we also do individually when you all come on. So I'm glad you all. Let's go around the room one more time and talk about what people can do to support where we're going this weekend. Start with 901.
All right. There's a great fish fry dinner and a block party at 901 Montpelier Street. Deborah Evans, myself, I will be out there frying that fish. Mm. But you can come and have a great time. Check out our website that we have, because it's just a lot of stuff going on in that little small corner store of 901 Montpelier Street.
There we go.
Yes.
Yes.
Youth Empowered Society. We got some folk and funk to bring me home, because what do I want? Housing. And when do I want it? Right now. Funk and funk. September 5th, which is tomorrow at 8 p.m. You can come and join us at the UB Blake Jazz Center at 847 North Howard Street. We are going to be rocking out with Caleb Stein, Jay Pope, Funk Friday, and a lot of youth that are really excited to see all your beautiful faces. So we look forward to that tomorrow.
And Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle are having our community supporter drive. It's, you know, going to be a month-long aggressive drive. We're trying to get 2,000 people to be supporters before the end of September. Go to our website, www.lbsbaltimore.com. Also like our page on Facebook. Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
And we'll continue these conversations on the air want to hear your thoughts about them, so let us know what you thought about today's program, but this specific section of our program today. And Davon, we'll know, will be on the next week or so to kind of really explore some of these questions in a much deeper way in terms of capacity building in our community, what that means, and how we have to change certain paradigms in our city and where power comes from. Good to have you all in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Reminding on your way out of here that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. And we're going to take a very brief break. We're going to go out with Say Si Bom by the great Eartha Kitt, because we are about to have a conversation with a woman who's bringing this One Woman Eartha Kitt show to Baltimore. But she's much more than just an Eartha Kitt show. We'll find out about Renee Marie in just a moment. Stay with us.
I will whisper this phrase, my darling, Say Si Bom.